Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, September 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's happy hour here on the show, which is a bit of a switch. Usually it's morbidly morose hour, but today it's happy hour. We'll delve into the wonderful world of cocktails, distilling, and spirits. We have a few connoisseurs of liquid intelligence in the studio. John Fisher is a professor at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. He is joined today by Rick Sicari and John Curtin of the Albany Distilling Company, and a surprise celebrity wino will be with us today. Curious about distilling or spirits? Well, if you have a question about beverages, the number to call is 800-348-2551. And who doesn't like cold beverages? 800-348-2551. We'll have some Singapore slings, a martini off, a few surprises on Food Friday after the news. Oh, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, mixing a drink is not a simple process. It involves exact science, a lot of patience, a little art. It's a fascinating topic with a lot of history behind it, or certainly we hope, and we're going to delve into it right here on Food Friday with a few experts. John Fisher is a professor of hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York. Rick Sicari and John Curtin are with the Albany Distilling Company, and our own Joe Donahue is here today as a celebrity taster. If you have questions about distilling, spirits, cider, or other beverages, the number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. John Fisher, we start with you before we get down to the business. And I got to tell you, if you have a chance to get to your web browser, take a look, wamc.org. We have a live video feed, and you'll see just how much booze is on the table here. And also all these devices. John Fisher is always prepared to mix a drink. What's new down at the, well, first of all, the brewery? It's about a year old now?
It's about a year and a half.
How's it going?
We opened October a year and a half ago. It's going really well. We only sell the beer on campus, so we don't get as much exposure as we would necessarily like, because what we do is essentially, until legislation was passed next door, what we do is patently illegal.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, thanks for saying that on the radio. Perfect.
Because we're a manufacturer, a wholesaler.
Are we on air?
to 6 different liquor licenses on campus.
Ah.
So usually you can only do one of the 3. And so legislation had to get passed so we could do all.
But
of
you're
them.
Cool now.
Oh yeah, we were. Yeah, well, we're the CIA. We wouldn't have done something illegal at the outset.
Okay. Which CIA?
No, but we do the good CIA. our drones carry cakes.
He's been preparing that one.
Using actually, but we do go to beer festivals. We go to the Desmond every year. We have one coming up tomorrow down at Dutchess County Hops called Hoptember. We have our own big beer event on campus on October 7th. That's a Saturday, I think, of Columbus Day weekend, and that's called Brew U.
Okay.
And all the VIP tickets are sold out already, but we do have general admission, and the ticket price includes all the food and all the seminars.
Oh, very nice. And the link for that, I believe, is right on our page for this program.
If it isn't, it will be, from what Jim said.
So. Okay, so yeah. Go to the Vox Pop page or Fine Food Friday, and you will find that link.
Or Culinary Restaurant Group is the other thing to search for.
Okay, fair enough. And Rick Sicari here and John Curtin as well from the Albany Distilling Company. Well, guys, the last time I saw you, it was about 2 days into your operation. Joe Donahue had you on the round table, and I got to sit in as a celebrity taster for that program. Mm-hmm. And you brought some 30-minute-old booze.
We did.
And I got to tell you, it was a little on the harsh side.
Well, it was 30 minutes old.
How have things been going since?
No changes.
No, you have some beautiful product here.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, things have been going great. So October 5th will mark 5 years of being open.
Has it really?
Been 5 yeah. already?
Wow, yeah. 5 years yeah. of it seems fine like only quality beverages.
So watch out if you yeah. see a 6-year-old whiskey.
Yeah. Well, that's
very clever.
That is a whole different topic. But all of our whiskeys, just to clarify, if you read the bottle, they say distilled and bottled by.
That's great.
That's the code to look for.
And is that a rarity or
it's
unfortunately
yeah.
yes.
Lots of bottles will say I've seen things as ridiculous as batched by, produced is generally the, yes, yeah. This was hand batched.
I've seen that too, yes. But I don't like that.
Yeah.
Let's start again.
So just, yeah.
But up to that since I was about 13.
Go to the tape, yeah.
You know, you brought a straight malt whiskey.
We did. So just
Scotch.
So Scotch is one of these terms that basically means whiskey from Scotland.
Taste like Scotch?
It depends on what kind of Scotch. So there,
Highland?
There are different. It would really be more of a lowland. So the Islay malts are super peaty. The Highlands are kind of in the middle. The Speysides are lower, and then the lowlands generally didn't have a lot of peat, so they were just roasted barley.
There you go.
And so that's more. It's really more similar to the Irish style too. So it is a malt whiskey, and so if it were in Scotland, it would be a single malt. Single just means one distillery, as opposed to multiple distilleries blended together.
Right.
But we have a different nomenclature here, and straight is the designation in the States, and that means that it is at least 2 years old, and there's been no coloring or flavoring added to it.
All right,
aged in new oak. Yeah,
so the straight malt whiskey is what many of us would think of as Scotch.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And strictly speaking, both the bourbons and the ryes are now straight bourbon and straight rye. We just haven't gotten the new labels yet.
Rye is very popular these days, eh?
It is. And it's one of these things that, if you go back 100 years, was the standard whiskey.
Yeah.
The first Manhattan was made with rye.
Yeah.
Manhattan cocktail.
Wait, we only make Manhattans with rye.
Arguably,
is that wrong?
You're
a
very good person.
That's how
you're right.
Be made, okay. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the old cocktail recipes, and you probably know more about this than I do, but when they said whiskey before Prohibition, they meant pretty universally meant specifically rye whiskey, American rye whiskey. That was the standard. Bourbon was kind of like the cheap stuff from out west. But during Prohibition, the four major bourbon distilleries, the ones that you would think of now as the four big ones,
were Senator's Club.
Heaven Hill.
They were, yeah. Well, that was Heaven Hill. Yeah, it was Heaven Hill, Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, and Buffalo one. Trace. Yeah,
right.
They were allowed to remain open for medicinal.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Whiskeys. Yeah,
you could get a prescription for whiskey from your doctor.
Probably disproportionately went towards senators and so forth. But so once Prohibition ended, the two whiskeys that could now fill the heavy demand were bourbon, because the distilleries were still there, and Scotch, because the Scots didn't stop drinking, it didn't slow them down. So that's why post-Prohibition, you saw a huge surge in the popularity of both Scotch and bourbon, and rye kind of died off. Rye also suffered, because in Canada, rye was a generic term for whiskey.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to have any rye in Canadian whiskey at all.
Oh, interesting.
So
another code that you see on the bottles, if you look more closely at a lot of these Canadian rye whiskeys, they
still.
They don't always say 100% from grain. They'll say made 75% from grain.
And that's just the Canadians. So we only have to be leary of the Canadians.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, okay. The right. Irish. Thanks, actually,
you came, Joe.
Yeah, if I can. The Irish are the worst defenders, actually.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yeah, by the way, our number here.
We're going to resemble that
remark. But the thing I notice, and Captain Obvious here, but this seems to be rye. The rye seems to be the darkest of the three. Is that correct?
In this case, yes, because it was aged in the smallest barrel.
Okay.
Because all the color comes from the wood.
Exactly, yes.
Booze comes out of a still completely clear.
Which explains why the 30-minute-old was
crystal clear.
Yeah.
And a little fiery.
And you see that with the rums, too.
Fiery.
Our white rum is fresh off the still, and then the aged rum has actually been sitting in bourbon barrels for about 2 years.
Well, that is terrific. Yeah. Now, you have a Quackenbush Stillhouse rum. Tell me about that one.
So Quackenbush, the Quackenbush Dow family, well, you know, the Quackenbushes owned most of what was Rensselaerwick, which is now part of the northern part of Albany, north of Clinton Ave. And they were enterprising, well-to-do, landed Dutch gentry. And when the Seven Years' War, French Indian War, broke out, a lot of British soldiers were garrisoned in and around Albany. Part of their ration, part of their pay was a rum ration.
Yeah.
And about 2 weeks after they were garrisoned in Albany, rum was banned within the city limits. I imagine it was a 2 week period.
This was a political thing?
It was a rowdy soldier thing.
Oh, I'll be darned.
So back then, the Rensselaerwyck territory or township, whatever, was just north of the city of Albany, and the Quackenbushes lived there, and they saw this huge demand for rum. So they opened up one of the first distilleries in the United States, the only really inland distillery, in somewhere between 1758 and 1760. Huh. And they operated, they produced rum for the British and whoever else wanted it for about 50 years.
And this is that recipe?
And it's that recipe, and our still is located about 50 yards from where their distillery was. Yeah.
We're joined today by John Fisher, who is professor of hospitality and service management at CIA in Hyde Park, Rick Sicari and John Curtin with the Albany Distilling Company. We talk mixology and booze and such today. Our celebrity taster is Joe Donahue, and we're going to get to tasting in a moment. And then we'll also get to some calls. It's 800-348-2551. John Fisher is ready to pour some drinks. We'll take a break. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, featuring over 80 local farmers and food artisans. Outdoor open-air market on River Street through October. Every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., troymarket.org. Big Y, family-owned and operated market with 5 locations in the Berkshires. Celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England, bigy.com. Equinox Farm in Sheffield, Massachusetts, supplying sustainably grown salad greens to restaurants and markets in the Berkshires since 1983. 413-229-2266 for wholesale orders. Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. And Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats. Home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days. Pekarskys.com.
It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551. And today we talk mixed drinks and booze and whatnot. And we're joined by Rick Sicari and John Curtin of Albany Distilling Company and John Fisher of the CIA and Joe Donahue here from, well, he's famous for the Roundtable and other programs here on WAMC. And John Fisher is great for the sound effects. What are you doing over there, man?
I'm going to shake a cocktail.
You're going to make, what are you making?
I'm making a Singapore Sling.
I've never had a Singapore Sling. Look at that. If you're watching at home, this guy's good. He could play in the Carmen Miranda backing orchestra. Hey, this is from an email that came in from Miranda, oddly enough. My dad used to make a fabulous drink called a Ramos Gin Fizz, which I never found on any bar menu. Where can I go to enjoy this delightful beverage? Oh, that's from Margot.
This one's a pain in the butt to make.
All right, tell us about the Ramos Gin Fizz, Mr. Fisher.
And perhaps tell us on mic.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I just finished pouring cocktails.
I'll say the speakeasy has it under the City Beer Hall.
The speakeasy has it?
Yep.
And what is it?
It's a gin and lavender, I think. John, get on the mic here. I'm floundering.
Me too.
Egg white.
A lot of egg white.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Basically, the reason that it's not popular is because you have to. The saying is you have to shake it until your arms are going to fall off, and then shake it a little more.
Ah.
11 minutes or something.
And one of the traditions is to pass it around to all the people at the bar and have everybody take a turn shaking it.
Oh, really?
Okay.
And it's very foamy. Now, speaking of foam.
Okay. Now this is a famous
Singapore
one.
Sling. Yeah. Is a cocktail from the Raffles Hotel in Singapore, from it's called their Long Bar.
Okay.
The recipe was lost in the early 1900s. Repatched together by a couple of bartenders who found like handwritten notes. And it's important to have the recipe because it's really complex, even though it looks and tastes at first like a simple punch drink. So cheers, first of all.
Cheers, yeah.
Thank
cheers.
You.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
So it's from the Raffles Bar.
Mm.
And
just keeps on going.
In most bars where you ask for a Singapore sling, the bartender looks around and says, what's red around here? I think there's something red in it. It's actually quite complex. It's a gin base.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're starting with a lot of botanicals, all the different smells, juniper plus many more. Then there's Benedictine, which is a liqueur made by Benedictine monks that's more than 500 years old. It was created in 1510.
Wow.
It also has Angostura bitters, which are packed with herbal flavors. And the reason that it's foamy is because it's pineapple juice. A lot of people, to make a foamy cocktail, will put it in a half an egg white, which is classically correct.
Yep.
But if you don't want to use an egg white to make a drink foamy, just make it with pineapple juice.
That's delicious.
And it'll foam up.
Now, how can you be sure that the drink that was reconstituted from the recipe is actually accurate?
I did a little bit of research on it, and it seems that they got notes from the bartenders who were making it originally, and they found personal notes with the recipe. But in the world of cocktails, you know, in cocktail history, the history happens while people are drinking.
Yeah.
So it's...
I found that to be true. Yes.
And David Wondrich, who's a great cocktail and spirits historian, he said that's one of the hardest things is that to nail down an original recipe, people were half in the bag.
At least.
And not more, right.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I find interesting about this particular cocktail is that it would seem to me that you could overdo the pineapple juice, but that would be a balance because this is a lovely mix.
That's exactly what that, and you know, the recipe will be up, I think, a little bit later. Oh, and I forgot, it also has a very high quality cherry liqueur in it called Cherry Hearing, which is basically the only cherry liqueur to buy.
Okay.
Except for one from another distillery that is not this gentleman.
But
Tuthill Town makes.
Oh, Core makes a great one too.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. Yeah.
But Tuthill Town makes a lovely cherry. Liqueur.
Harvest beer, I should say.
Yeah. But anyway, so there are a lot of ingredients in this cocktail, that quarter ounce of Benedictine, the dashes of Angostura bitters, the fact that it's gin instead of rum.
Yep.
There are a lot of subtle complexities to this drink that you could, it's kind of like great jazz guitar. You can just play it in the background during a party and ignore it, but it makes everybody feel better.
Yeah.
Or you can sit and listen to it and analyze it. You can just quaff this, or you can stop and say, where did that flavor come from? So, but ask a bartender to make more than one of these for you and he'll kill you.
Or at least expect decent tip.
I was about to ask for a second one, so maybe I'll hold off.
Our number here,
like, is asking for a second Ramos Gin Fizz.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We're joined today by John Curtin and Rick Sicari of Albany Distilling and John Fisher of the CIA. And, that was delicious. How long did it take you to practice that and make it right?
I didn't practice at all. I just whipped it up. I made the base for it. I made this morning. It's just about having the right ingredients and measuring it. And that's the big thing with bartending. We were talking about this before. Is it really important to measure cocktails? Well, scotch on the rocks? No. Bourbon with a splash of water? No. There's no measuring to do. But the cocktails that have more complex recipes.
So you really measure.
Oh, yeah, look at these. These are my jiggers right here.
How much?
Anyway,
so this the big jigger.
The big one is 1 ounce and 2 ounces.
Okay.
The bottom one is half and three quarters. Oh. Hello. Sorry about that.
It's all right. All the sound effects.
A dented jigger.
They're not holding anything.
And this is half an ounce and three quarters of an ounce. So basically, you have every measurement you need anyway. But then if you look inside, you can see lines
for
a half ounce. Lines for 1.5 ounces.
But a good bit of advice from John Fisher for those just beginning to mix drinks, follow the directions.
Measure it first. Well, just like cooking, you know.
Well, that's not exactly true. If you bring three chefs in, they might say, well, I put a splash of this, put a splash of that in.
You bring three bartenders in, you're going to get three different, potentially, Singapore Sling recipes. In fact, on the small screen network, Robert Hess is called Drink Boy. And he is a cocktail master, frankly. And on his video for this cocktail, he says that he's seen lots of recipes that did not have Benedictine.
Very interesting.
And that's the defining feature. I think it would be the defining feature.
And you're sure that was in the original recipe?
Me personally, no.
But somebody
is. The people
is.
I trust are.
Well, it's almost like a folk culture. You know, people pass drink recipes from one bar to the next, or somebody will go to a bar and order something and tell the bartender how it's made, how they think it's made.
Yeah, and my first bartending job, I said those words. I think there's something red in this drink. Mm-hmm. What do we have that's red around here?
And you know, I think that goes back to it too, John. You know, people were half in the bag when they were sharing these recipes, so that's why they're going to change over time.
But as far as art and science and measuring, then there's the martini.
Yes.
And so the classic martini had a fairly high ratio of vermouth.
It was half and half.
50-50, right?
That's crazy.
It was 50-50, and it originally wasn't vermouth. They think it might have been an orange liqueur first because the British loved sweet. And then when the vermouths showed up on these shores in the early 1900s, this is before Prohibition by 20 years, bartenders started using them in the place of other sweeteners for sweet vermouth because Italians came up with that before dry vermouth. They say, I think it's 1864 is a specific brand of sweet vermouth. Antica... Remember the maker?
Carpano.
Yeah, Carpano Antica. They claimed to be the inventors of vermouth. And then the French saw the Italians making something. They said, well, we have to make it too. And they started making dry vermouth.
Noilly Pratt right here.
Right. And so that's why I always use French dry vermouth and Italian sweet vermouth. If you notice, sweet vermouth is not red, so don't call it red vermouth. It's brown because of the caramel sweetening. But... So the vermouth started showing up, and bartenders started experimenting with them, and that's when the Manhattan was invented, the martini was invented. They're called the ones with vermouth are called Milanese drinks because of Milan and Italy and the dry vermouth.
But a classic martini going back to when, I don't know, the 20s or whenever they were invented, it was a lot of vermouth.
Unbelievable.
It would have been about 3-1.
And when I make a martini, you always say, what, 5-1?
You want dust on the olive, right?
I'll put a full shaker of gin and two dashes of, a splash of vermouth.
Sometimes I'll rinse the glass.
Yeah, people just wave the bottle over it. Boom, we got the vermouth in there. Call it
well, it's. I don't like that. I mean, otherwise you're drinking straight gin. And if you have a good vermouth, I think it helps.
Sure.
But just not too much, in my estimation.
Right.
This is an important part with the martini, though, which is that what makes the drink taste better is not it. Of course, the vermouth makes a difference, but the amount of water dilution in the drink makes the cocktail taste better. Because if you take the vermouth out of the fridge and the gin out of a freezer and you pour it into a glass, it's going to taste horrible. The stirring or shaking dilutes it minimally. And it's just enough. What it does technically is it loosens up the bonds between the esters and the aromatics between those esters and the alcohol because they're alcohol dissolved by alcohol. If there's a lot of alcohol, they are going to hold on to the alcohol. Once you add water, it loosens the chemical bonds and you can actually smell the aromatics, which is why you add one ice cube to a glass of bourbon or a small splash of water. And the Scottish will say a splash of spring water or something.
Branch water or something.
And branch water is bourbon. Right? Ah. And I don't know what the hell branch water is.
It comes off a branch, right?
Well, it might be from a branch of a river.
Well, it's interesting. In Scotland, on every bar, they have fancy little porcelain water jugs because that's the standard. I mean, it's understood that that's what you do. The reason that it's bottled at the proof or the percentage that it's bottled at is because once you start diluting it down and you break apart those bonds, it clouds up.
Wow.
So for us, we bottle at 43% because we're not using all the PD hydrocarbons aren't gonna interfere with it. But once you drop below for Scotch, a lot of times 46 is the magic number, and for American whiskeys, assuming they're distilled and not chill filtered, 43, 44 is the magic number. Once you drop below that, those bonds are broken, and a lot of the esters will sort of come out of solution and form into it settles out into in kind of a white sediment. Looks kind of gross. It's purely cosmetic, but I mean, and in fact, it's an indication that there has been no filtering, so it'll probably taste better. But proof is really a default setting in terms of appearance.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, an easy connection to that, too, is absinthe. You know, you add your water to it and it clouds right up. A lot of people have seen that when they when they make that cocktail.
And that's called the Louche. Yep.
We are joined today by Rick Sicari and John Curtin of Albany Distilling and John Fisher of CIA. And John, we go back years talking about martinis. And back when I had little kids, I would say, look,
what did you do to them?
I shake. No, but I shake martinis because I don't have time to stir a martini. And you have admonished me over the years.
I have backed you.
You have said you are to stir a martini, sir. And I say, I do not have time. And I must confess, I like a shaken martini.
That's very James Bond of you.
I will. Well, you know where that, what that, you know about the Vespers, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the original James Bond cocktail was not a straight martini.
It was vodka and gin.
It's called a Vespers. Vodka, gin, and quinoa lillet, and a large lemon peel. And he wanted it shaken hard. And for a long time, he likes his drinks big and very, very large and very cold. And he only drinks one. That's all from Casino Royale. And because people heard Shaken Not Stirred in that first movie, which actually had the first product placement of any movie, and it was Smirnoff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right.
And
small little company.
That's what people heard. They wanted to be James Bond. Now, I don't blame you for wanting it shaken because it is faster. It'll get you your drink faster when you need it. But it is technically not correct because you get too much dilution.
Aha. Uh-huh. And again, I
and
like
the dilution.
And
one more thing that I'll tell you about when we make our
drink. All right. So you are actually going to make a shaken and a stirred martini.
You said you're shaken.
Oh, I'm going to shake? Okay, I'll shake.
Oh, it's an interactive program today. I love when you get to do something.
Now I have performance anxiety.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what happens.
And
okay, I shake. Okay.
Same ratio, same.
Now, my
ratio.
Somebody taught me long ago that you have to shake these until you can no longer hold the shaker. They got to be that cold.
That was what my dad always said.
Really?
Yeah.
Did I know your dad?
A slow 10 count.
I've heard for shaking it's 17 seconds on average, and for stirring it's 34. What I've.
And while I'm doing
this, very specific.
John Fisher is. Stirring.
That's the point, on average, where the temperature between the ice and the liquid will.
Okay, so right. Equal. So using your calculations, Ray should be done now, and John goes a little bit longer.
Okay. Twice as long. Yeah.
There we go.
I'm hosting a show, so. Oh, it smells good.
Certainly stuffed you in the best.
What gin are we drinking here?
Bombay Sapphire.
Ooh, Bombay
nothing,
Sapphire.
Nothing wrong with that. That'll be Joe's.
There.
Huh?
I can't even finish filling it.
Okay. Oh, because of the water.
All the dilution. Now, do you, John?
God.
Do you mm-hmm. add an olive? Are you a purist? No accoutrement.
No, I brought a lemon for that.
Okay.
Lemon.
Now you can see immediately the difference visually with the one John just stirred.
Right. So this is cloudy, right?
Yes.
And meanwhile the. This one, the one I'm pointing to, that's the stirred one,
yeah,
correct?
This is the stirred one.
Okay.
And again, cloudiness is going to indicate that it's lower proof.
Now, interesting. Right. John.
It also means that it was aerated, and the bubbles don't look as nice because one of the nicknames for a martini in the 50s was a see-through.
Ah.
If it's cloudy, it's not transparent.
Well, you know, at my house, because glasses tend to break often, we use nice stainless steel martini glasses that we put in the freezer. And that's probably also wrong. John is looking askance again. But, you know, it is what it is.
Now, I'm going to take umbrage with this, with the classification that's right or wrong.
Okay.
It's
right. Well, he didn't say that. He didn't say I was wrong.
You said you were wrong.
But he was being nice.
Right. we were talking about this earlier. People often ask us, well, first of all, I want to say that what we're doing right now, just sitting around and tasting drinks.
Yeah.
Is what people assume that Rick and I do all day?
Yeah.
No. We just do paperwork and cry. That's basically what running a distillery is, a combination of crying and paperwork.
Yeah. What are you crying over?
Taxes.
Oh, all right.
Business things.
So the normal stuff.
Okay. Imagine your business.
Didn't know if we could help you with
anything. As follows. You spend a pile of money to produce a product, and then you stick it into a leaky wooden box for 2 years before you even sell it.
Well, try talking into an inanimate object and not knowing if anybody's listening.
Business, yeah. We've got a call. No, that's at least one person.
Well, that's good. And we had some before, but we've been having so much fun. They hung up in disgust. Rick in Westbrookville, in there just for 1 minute. John Fisher, the stirred martini is absolutely outstanding.
Now, have you tried this one?
No, but I made that one. I know how it tastes. Actually, no, I don't, because I don't know how much vermouth you put in there.
Just try that.
I did 2.5 ounces of gin and a half ounce of vermouth.
Okay, that's probably more vermouth than I put in.
I went 5-1 to try to be...
May I?
Show off?
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I'm going to take a quick hit of this. I'm going to hand it right to you.
Now, here the thing is, this is also one of the most important parts that is a subtle point. How it feels, the mouthfeel... The stirred one feels velvety and leaden.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's like it hugs your mouth. And the shaken one is more watery. Flavor is less intense, but also doesn't have the texture.
Very interesting. Yeah,
because when you take the bottle of booze out of the freezer, it's viscous, right? So when you stir with less dilution, you get that. That's part of a martini.
Okay. You know what? I must say I prefer olive over a lemon peel.
I do not blame you for that either.
Yeah. And I think I told you a couple of weeks ago we were making them with cocktail onions, and you said that's something else entirely.
That's a Gibson.
That's a good drink.
And that was my grandmother's drink.
Guy.
Yeah? You like that? Yeah. Well, let's take a call here, and then we'll take a break. Rick in Westbrookville, New York. Rick, you're on.
Hey, how you guys doing? You're having too much fun.
Yeah, we are.
Okay. This is work.
I'm looking to try to make the perfect Bloody Mary by measurement for the shaker. But I was a bar back for many years, but still, I never got to mix the drinks because I'm not allowed to serve them. So, by shaker and then by the gallon.
Well, there's so many. It's like recipes for chili.
Yeah,
yeah, I know. Just... I make chili, but, you know, my recipe is
Well, then
is
you
mine.
Can make a good Bloody Mary.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can put a lot of stuff in there, but a standard, maybe.
Okay, a standard recipe,
and
then we'll take a break.
The very basic would be... Tomato juice, Worcestershire, and horseradish.
Horseradish is actually technically a garnish. So it's celery salt, Worcestershire, Tabasco, tomato juice, and then 2 ounces of vodka, whatever fits in your glass.
And two ounces of vodka.
Oh, 2 ounces
shaker.
Is normal for one
shaker.
Cocktail. Yeah.
2 ounces into a shaker.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're making one drink, 2 ounces
right.
is the normal portion of
well,
vodka.
Well, that's normally like about a drink and a half, actually, out of a shaker. But anyway, and if I was going to do it in volume by the gallon?
Good luck, brother. Good luck.
Gallon of vodka?
Oh, I've seen it done.
Where are you going?
I don't know the exact measurements. Well, you know, I'm just trying to get the measurements.
Okay.
That's all.
As for batching cocktails.
This is great.
As for batching cocktails, you just, you know, you figure out what the final volume is you're going to want, and you multiply the measurements from the ingredient.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Just use the calculator.
So if you're making 10, you'd want 20 ounces of vodka.
Right.
All right, we've got to take a break here. We're joined today by John Fisher, Rick Sicari, and John Curtin. Also, Joe Donahue, and you at 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services, offering assistance via a new website, findalawyerny.org. Warwick Valley Farmers Market, the 24th year of providing locally grown produce and farm fresh food with 37 family farms and artisan kitchens and bakeries. Open Sundays, warwickvalleyfarmersmarket.org. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op, featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Convino Wine Bar, Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 70 wines by the glass and a full menu from afternoon snack through nightcap, live music Sundays and Mondays, outdoor seating, Thorne's Marketplace, convinonoho.com. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and no moo dairy free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harolds.com.
Oh boy, I'll tell you what, there is a lot to argue about here during a break of Vox Pop Food Friday when we talk cocktails with John Fisher and Rick Sicari, John Curtin, and Joe Donahue. Our number is 800-348-2551. And I got to tell you, John. You have convinced me. I will now stir my martinis, but you brought special gear here. What did you bring?
Where did the stirred one go, by the way?
No idea.
No,
there it is.
You're on camera.
Okay.
Yeah. This is just kind of standard equipment for drink making. I mentioned the company. Can I mention?
Sure.
It?
Yeah.
It's a company called Cocktail Kingdom. They have a website. They make arguably the prettiest barware in the country today. They supply a lot of great bars. And anywhere you go in, and if anybody who's watching sees this, this is called a Urai mixing glass.
That's what I need.
They're on every great bar in the country. In fact, a great bar just down in Kingston, Stockade Tavern. Paul's the owner there, and it's just a wonderful bar.
Yeah.
And so mason glasses for stirred cocktails, the shakers for shaken cocktails. This is called a Hawthorne strainer. The one with the spring on it is called a Hawthorne strainer.
And what does the spring do?
It just strains out the large chunks of citrus or whatever. Although a lot of bartenders these days do what's called double straining, where they have another small mesh strainer that they pour the cocktail through. Personally, I like the little pulp.
I like extra
pulp orange juice.
Yeah.
I like, you know, mouthfeel. But a lot of bartenders don't like that, and so they use double straining. So there's also a strainer called a julep strainer. A lot of knuckleheads use it as the maraschino cherry and olive spoon. It looks like in the restaurant business, it's called a female spoon, believe it or not.
Okay.
But the shakers, you know, the shakers are a thing that throw people off because they don't know how to use them. And the best shaker for a home cocktail maker is called a cobbler shaker, which has the top and the little built-in strainer.
Yeah, that's what I have.
And the cap comes off.
Yeah.
That is the best shaker for a home bartender because you don't have to worry how to break the seal on this tin-on-tin or glass-on-tin. It's called a Boston shaker. So Boston shaker is two pieces.
You have a top, a smaller shaker you put on the top. Let's quickly, before we get to the phones, go with an email here from Jeremy. Is it the cold that helps the flavor? If so, then would it be better to store the bottles in the fridge or even freezer?
Cold hides flavor, but it'll keep the drink colder for a longer time. Like the gin and tonic in the summer, keep the bottle of gin in the freezer. But, you know, if you ever taste melted ice cream, it's so much sweeter than frozen ice cream because when ice cream is really cold, you can't taste the sweet.
It
numbs your taste buds.
Oh, interesting. So if you have lousy gin, freeze it and make a martini.
To be honest, John, the same thing goes for higher alcohol. The higher the alcohol is, it's also going to, you know, affect your taste buds. Whereas if you drop the proof down a little bit, you'll be able to taste it a little easier.
And so the proof of, say, your bourbon over there, 82, 83?
86.
Let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Kathy in Seward, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, you guys were speaking so wonderfully about the martinis.
Yes.
But what can you tell me about a vodka gimlet?
A gimlet's just lime, sugar, and vodka, right?
No, technically, a real gimlet, a vodka gimlet is not a real gimlet.
A gin gimlet is
a real gimlet, and it's made with Rose's lime juice, which is a preserved sweetened lime juice that was used by the British Navy to fend off
scurvy.
And, of course, there was gin for the officers on the Navy ships and rum for the sailors. So the gin gimlet was the gin with that prepared syrup. And there are a lot of young bartenders today who, if you ask for a gimlet, they will go to make it with fresh lime juice because they've taken this oath to only use fresh juices, which I largely believe in, except in this case where the real cocktail is made with Rose's lime juice. Now, the trick with Rose's lime juice is most of the time you see it, it's brown in the bottle, which means it's old and oxidized and nasty. It should be bright chartreuse. And
right.
then it's an oxymoron, but it's fresh.
And how long
Rose's
will it keep?
Lime juice.
In the fridge.
It'll keep well in the fridge if you get a fresh bottle to begin
with. Yeah, but on the shelves it does turn color. I've seen that.
Yeah, it turns brown, but don't buy that stuff.
Look for the green.
Have something
green,
else. Have a gin and tonic
instead.
Yeah,
it's got to be green.
Well, I do love a good gimlet, though, and thank you, Kathy. And what's the ratio that you would use of Rose's lime juice to gin?
It's kind of like a martini ratio, but I would say probably – I haven't made a gimlet in so long. My guess would be 2 ounces of gin and 1 ounce of Rose's.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
And so, again, the John Fisher martini is a 5-to-1 vermouth to – or gin to vermouth?
I actually like him even wetter than that. This one I made for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the 5-to-1 was for you.
Yeah, you said you're 3-to-1 is your preference?
Well, it depends on the gin and it depends on the vermouth, too.
Yeah.
Because the base ingredients are different. Your favorite gin, Boodles, is a very soft gin. I might use less vermouth for that. But if it's something that's really sharp and junipery, like Bombay Sapphire, what we have here, or Tanqueray, I might add a little more vermouth to soften the drink.
Back in the day, I would make a martini that had maybe 5 parts gin, 1 to 2 parts dry, and a couple of drops of sweet vermouth.
That's verging on a Martinez, but not
what's
really
a Martinez?
Yeah.
Martinez? I've never heard of that.
Kind of the precursor to the martini.
Oh, really? All right, back to the phones we go. It's 800-348-2551, and Charles in Dutchess County. Charles, you're on.
Hey, gentlemen, good afternoon.
Hi.
Howdy.
I heard the discussion about Bloody Marys, and I just wanted to call in and identify that Clamato rather than tomato juice, at least for me personally, is a great is an excellent alternative. I know that's called a Bloody Caesar.
That's correct.
But still, when I have a Bloody Mary, I tend to use Clamato. It's a little thinner. Again, tomato juice is a little thicker, and I find a lot of the contents stay at the bottom of the container. But still, with the seasonings such as celery salt, etc.
Celery salt.
That's a classic choice. The or adding clam juice on your own is a Bloody Caesar. Then there you add, if you add beef broth, it's a Bloody Bull. If you leave the tomato juice out, it's called a Bloody. It's called a Bull Shot.
Oh yeah, we talked about that.
It was just kind of scary.
Why? What's wrong with that?
It's a real Mad Men era hangover helper.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
My secret ingredient is sashimi, the Japanese. Seven spice. That's my.
Can you use V8?
Sure.
Then you get your vitamins as well.
I usually use half V8, half tomato at home.
Really?
Yeah, I'm the same way. Half V8, half tomato. Yeah.
I did not know Clamato was still available.
I like Cholula better than Tabasco too.
Cholula.
It's like chili. We can talk about this for an hour about different.
Oh, believe me, he has. He's been on talking about chili many times before. Let's go over to Janet in Rhinebeck. Janet, you're on.
Here I go. And this is like alcohol 101.
Right.
How does one take a gallon of, you know, very good apple juice, apple cider, and turn it into hard cider?
How do you take a gallon of apple juice and turn it into hard cider? Who wants this one?
Let it sit outside.
It has to be cold, though, right?
But it can't be pasteurized. No. Because that killed the yeast.
No. I mean, organic. I mean, freshly squeezed, you know, absolute apple juice.
Let it sit outside.
Somebody's talking about throwing raisins in there. And, I mean, what do you add to a gallon of unprocessed apple cider and turn it into hard cider?
Time.
Literally nothing.
Yeah, time.
How much time?
Because there's yeast on the apple skin.
Exactly. Yeah. There's yeast literally on everything. So
how much time?
If you give it some time, and there's so much sugar in apple cider or apple juice.
On its own?
Yep. The yeast will naturally start to eat those sugars, and the sugars will turn into ethanol. So
how long will Janet have to wait if she wants to make her own?
About a week.
It's not long.
Really?
When I was a kid, we went to Aunt Dorothy's house. She lived in Staten Island, don't you know?
Yes.
And we would bring her cider. My mother would bring her cider, very proud to bring her cider fresh from the local apple orchard.
Yeah.
Right.
And Aunt Dorothy would immediately just put it out out on the shelf to wait for it to get hard.
That's it.
And then in a week or so, she was a happy woman.
Because the fermentation, the time of fermentation depends on how cold it is or hot it is.
It has nothing to do with throwing a couple of raisins in there or yeast.
That would just add more sugar, which would be more sugar for the yeast to eat.
Yeah.
It would just make it stronger.
Make more alcohol content.
Higher alcohol content because of more sugar.
And so if you... What happened?
She said, that's fine. Okay. Yeah, nothing wrong with more alcohol content.
I'm not going to slow her down.
Yeah. and Dorothy felt that way too, by the way.
But you said, John Fisher, that it depends on the temperature. What would be a recommended one?
The back porch in the Northeast.
So cool. 40s?
Yeah. Something and that's,
like that?
That's how cider happens. And we're the only country that calls... that refers to non-alcoholic apple juice as cider. The rest of the world, cider means booze.
Ah. Yeah. What do we have here?
Yeah,
we have Puritans. Oh, sorry, you mean the glasses. Right, yeah.
We have collaborated, the three of us, on this cocktail. This is a real daiquiri.
Oh, really?
So it's made with their rum, and I just brought fresh lime juice, and simple syrup, which is just sugar and water, half and half. There are different kinds of simple syrups, but
yep.
And this is the classic daiquiri. There are some great bartenders who have, for whom this is their favorite cocktail. It is just the essence of simplicity.
Hemingway and
Hemingway's instead of using simple syrup, used maraschino liqueur.
Oh boy! And that didn't turn out that well for him in the end, did it?
Well, he was diabetic and he wanted less sugar, so he didn't want the simple syrup. And yeah. Maraschino is a very strongly flavored liqueur,
so it gets complicated.
But I have a bartending friend, Chris McMillan, who's a great bartending historian in New Orleans, and he said that using maraschino in cocktails is like flying without a license.
Oh, well, that was very delicious.
Very Hemingway-esque.
This is amazing,
and I like the rum.
Delightful.
Thank you.
Just delightful.
That's the Quackenbush.
It is the unaged. The
2 ounces, 1 ounce, 1 ounce.
Really nice.
2 ounces of rum, 1 ounce of fresh lime juice. And
say that again slowly. I'm sorry.
It's a 2-to-1-to-1 is the standard recipe for sour cocktails, which is 2 ounces of the base liqueur.
Right.
The same thing for a margarita.
It's good. It's good.
So 2 ounces of rum, 1 ounce of fresh lime juice, and 1 ounce of simple syrup.
John Fisher is here from CIA. Rick Sicari and John Curtin are here from Albany Distilling and Joe Donahue. And we'll go back to the phones. And Chris in Rexford is on. Chris.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a quick question, and it goes back to another generation of people who would drink, I think it was gin. My father, and I used to get him these bottles, but I can't find them anymore, drinks this something called Geneva. It's an old Dutch drink, and you could get the bottle in a crock. Crock-like bottle. It looked like a crock, gray in color. And I wondered if that was gin or not.
John Fisher actually brought a bottle of this.
Established 1575, John.
I have a bottle right here from Bols, which is one of the first producers of it. And it is the original Dutch gin, which is very different from the London dry gin that
we're used to.
Do you want to taste it? It's much maltier, and you don't drink it in a cocktail. Remember how you felt about that Half Moon gin?
Yeah,
it is. In Holland, they drink it as a shot with a beer on the side.
I see.
Yeah, very good. Right.
All right. Let's just try a little taste.
Well, let's just shoot it.
You need your beer too.
I have to drive the show here.
Is it stronger than
4 minutes? For God's sake.
It's about the same strength, but it's stronger in flavor. It's a little bit sweeter. It has more mouthfeel, more
That's
body.
Nice.
And it's very nice, but you don't make a martini from it.
It almost has a citrusy nose to it.
You would never make a gin and tonic with it. It would not taste right. Just like
but
the
it is still available.
Cocktail. Oh, yeah.
Now, why did you bring it?
I brought it so we could taste different gins.
Okay.
Because every gin is different.
Where might Chris find something like that?
Just a good liquor store.
Okay.
A good liquor store.
And there's a lot of...
I've looked in liquor stores. I just have to find the right one.
Well, actually, a big liquor store is what I should say.
Thanks a lot,
and there's a lot of New York producers, distilleries here, that are doing both sides of gin. You could either do that London-style dry that, you know, certain people like, or you can do the Genever, which is a little bit more approachable, a little bit easier to drink, but... As John was saying, you know, you're going to do certain cocktails with the London style, and you're going to stay away from that.
Is gin tough to make?
We haven't gone down that road yet.
It's actually frighteningly easy.
Really,
you can't throw a rock in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, without hitting a gin distillery. Now,
all right, John Fisher, tell us about the beer event again. We're almost out of time here.
Okay, Brew You at the Culinary Institute of America on October 7th. It is our second Brew You. It's a food and beer event with seminars and CIA quality food available all under one price.
And how do we find out?
And local breweries, a lot of great local breweries. Just go to the CIA restaurant group.com or search for Brew You at the Culinary Institute of America.
Can I do a plug too? Quick?
Sure, absolutely.
So we're part of the Capital Craft Beverage Trail.
This is Albany Distilling.
Yes. There are 20 producers in the greater Capital District, and we're doing our annual Drink Albany the night before. So you have a little... preview.
Nice.
Yeah, so we'll have 20 of us. It's at the New York State Museum on the 6th.
And what is your website, by the way?
So ours is albanydistilling.com.
All right. Hey, great having you here. I'm glad things are going well in the last... I can't believe it's been 5 years, but thank you for being here. Joe Donahue?
Ray, I'll be drinking this weekend both of the Greenwich and Cambridge locations of the Argyle Brewing Company.
And give my regards to your Aunt Dorothy.
Oh, well, she's passed, but she lived...
much longer because of the hard cider. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot for being here, and thanks, everyone, for listening. Support comes from Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, located in the Old Town Hall, Sunderland, Massachusetts. Open Tuesday through Sunday at 5, featuring outdoor dining on the patio and front porch throughout the summer. BlueHeron.dining.com. That's BlueHeronDining.com. Electric City Food Co-op, sharing a vision to bring a community-owned grocery to Schenectady, connecting local producers with local consumers. Membership online, electriccityfood.coop. Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley and Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectrical.net. And Silver Bay YMCA, Conference and Family Retreat Center on Lake George, offering conference spaces, lodging, and family activities, silverbay.org. Thanks again to John Fisher, Rick Sicari, and John Curtin for being with us today, and to Joe Donahue. Thank you for listening and for the great questions. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Alan will be back. No, Alan is off next week. I'll be doing Medical Monday next week, so lucky you. Stand by for news.